Welcome to the ADAA podcast about treating coexisting depression and anxiety. Today we're talking with Dr. Dennis Greenberger. He's a clinical psychologist and the founder and director of the Anxiety and Depression Center in Newport Beach, California. He's also an assistant clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of California, Irvine College of Medicine, where he teaches cognitive therapy to psychiatric residents. Good morning, Dr. Greenberger.
Good morning.
We know that anxiety and depression often co-occur. How common is this in adults and children? And also, can you talk about if someone has depression, if they are more likely to develop an anxiety disorder or vice versa?
There is a high co-occurrence rate between anxiety disorders and depressive disorders. What most of the research says is that if someone has an anxiety disorder of some sort, they are more likely to have a depressive disorder as well. There probably is a co-occurrence rate of between 50% and 60% for a major depressive disorder or a dysthymic disorder along with any of the anxiety disorders.
What's the difference between anxious thoughts and depressive thoughts?
Well, there is a content difference between anxious thoughts and depressive thoughts. People who are depressed do tend to think in a way that's different than people who are anxious, and different in ways from all of us when we're not anxious and depressed. When we're depressed, we tend to think in negative ways in three very distinct areas. We tend to think negatively about ourselves, we tend to think negatively about the future, and we tend to think negatively about ongoing experiences. This is what's known as the negative cognitive triad, and it distinctly characterizes people who are depressed. That's differentiated from people who are anxious, who tend to think more in catastrophic ways. The thinking of people who with a variety of anxiety disorders is characterized by what if, and then fill in the blank. What if some catastrophe occurs? Anxious thinking is always future-oriented, and the content or the theme of anxious thinking is that there's an imminent catastrophe. Something bad is about to happen.
Can you talk about the similarities between the symptoms of anxiety and the symptoms of depression?
Well, there are some similarities in the symptoms of anxiety and depression, and that may account for some but not all of the co-occurrence between the two. But certainly people who are both anxious and depressed will be irritable often. There's concentration difficulties. There's sleep difficulties. There are decision-making problems. And both depression and anxiety have some impact on energy level as well. The differences between the two is that there's a mood difference. People who are depressed tend to be more sad and down. People who are anxious tend to be nervous, anxious, or panicky. There's the cognitive differences that I was talking about earlier, where people who are anxious tend to think catastrophically, and people who are depressed tend to think more negatively.
Does one cause the other?
I don't know that one causes the other. I don't know that we're far enough along in science to indicate that depression causes anxiety or anxiety causes depression, although in any individual circumstance, that could certainly be the case. I do think that they exacerbate one another and that they coexist along the lines that I was talking about earlier.
So when a person has anxiety and depression, when is the best time to seek treatment? How would somebody know when it's time to ask for help?
It's a good question. When the symptoms begin to significantly interfere with one's life, would be one sign that it may be good to bring somebody else in for a consultation. When your efforts at self-help have failed in some way, that would be another sign. Or when you just think that you're not able to do it on your own and you're not living the life that you are meant to live or that you want to live or you're capable of living because the symptoms are interfering, that would be a third sign.
So how do you go about treating a patient who has both anxiety and depression? Do you treat one disorder before the other?
It would, the treatment for depression and anxiety has some similarities. So some of the skills that we're trying to build in cognitive behavior therapy are applicable for people who are depressed or people who are anxious. So if you think of the treatment as simply a skill-building kind of process, and it may be more than that, but from the skill-building component, the skills that people develop to work with their depression and or their anxiety are going to be applicable to the other mood kind of problem as well. Now, as to the issue of which one gets treated first, that would really be an individual case-by-case scenario. You tend to treat the disorder that is most prominent or most disabling in a person's life first.
So when someone comes to you, what can they expect in treatment?
Well, the hope would be if someone comes to someone who specializes in cognitive behavior therapy, that first and foremost, they'll get a very thorough assessment. That will include an assessment of the symptoms that they're having. It'll include an assessment of their life history, the impact the symptoms are having on their lives, what kind of treatment they may have gotten in the past, what's worked, what's not worked, the motivation for treatment, family history, developmental history, social history, educational history, really everything, so we can understand the context that the mood difficulties exist in. Once the history is devised, the hope is that the cognitive behavior therapy would move forward in what we call a collaborative way. So it's the therapist and the patient working together to try to solve the problem. And there would be periodic and regular assessments of any progress that's being made. So to ensure that the therapy stays on track to reaching the goals, which is a reduction or elimination of the symptoms.
Good. And can you address relapsing? Is it common or typical, and how do you go about treating it?
Well, at the end of any successful therapy, the very final stages include segments on relapse prevention. So there's quite an extensive discussion at the end about what to look for and how one might respond if the symptoms begin to reemerge. What the research evidence shows is that the relapse rates for people who receive cognitive behavior therapy are much less than people who don't receive the cognitive behavior therapy. So if somebody is treated with medication, and then there's another group of people with medication and cognitive behavior therapy, once treatment ends, the people who had the cognitive behavior therapy have significantly lower relapse rates. So it is a common problem, but the problem is alleviated to some degree by cognitive behavior therapy.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Greenberger. And this is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADAA.